How's it going, everyone? Welcome to the fourth episode of Pundits of Pioneer. I'm one of your hosts, Brandon Pearson, and joining me on the other line is Slater Claudel. How's it going, Slater?
It's going well. It's been a good week. How have you been?
I've been doing all right. I've been gotten a chance to play some more Pioneer. I've been playing a few different other formats, but I've been really enjoying Pioneer so far and where it's been going. And we're going to be talking about that more with the bands and such, but I think the format's in a great place right now.
Yeah, I've only gotten to get in a little bit of action this week after getting back from Richmond. I was down there for the GP and hanging out with some friends that were qualified for the Mythic Championship. But I am super excited to visit the world of Pioneer with a lot of these very sweet 5-0 lists that we've seen this week.
Yeah, how was the mystery event? You got to crack open those mystery boosters?
Yeah, so I screwed up the main event, and I drafted the mystery booster convention pack set, and it was one of the best experiences I've had at a GP, like, straight up honest. Like, I've never been so happy, more happy to scrub the main event. I drafted the set 12 times. And I paid for one of those drafts. So that was good EV-wise. And I ended up coming out about $50 and 4 packs up on the weekend and a bunch of the cool test print cards that were printed in the packs.
Are any of those cards worth money? Those test print cards?
It's crazy what you can, like, convince someone. I mean, anything's worth money as long as someone's willing to pay for it, right?
Yeah, sure.
I mean, that's basic economics, right? That's how Rome was built, right? And everything else. So yeah, some of the cards, like, there's like this card that, like, puts like 4 time walks in your deck. And I guess that card can, like, sell for like $75.
Whoa. That's pretty wild.
Yeah, it was pretty wild. Like, vendors are buying, like, just like any of the test print cards for, like, anywhere from, like, one day they were buying them at 5, then it was like down to 3, and then, like, the final day that vendor was at like 1. But they also buying, like, the packs themselves for like $20, and, like, I mean, I also saw on, like, eBay, like, the pack sealed packs were, like, selling for, like, 50. So, like, it was definitely probably the best weekend to get value out of the set. But it's only going to be at conventions, and the test print cards will only be at conventions for the next year. So if you're down at the SCG Invitational, which is happening starting tomorrow, and you happen to scrub out of the main event, I'm sorry, but you should definitely check out Mystery Booster and play draft. I think the sealed is a little high variance, but definitely check out the draft if you are down there this weekend in Roanoke. So yeah. Speaking about the SCG Invitational, it's Pioneer, and we are super excited to watch it on Twitch starting tomorrow.
Yeah, definitely. I can't wait for that. I love the SCG events to watch them on Twitch. I think they're a really good tool to kind of get information from, because a lot of the people that are qualified for these events, I mean, I don't know what it ends up looking like now, because Mythic Championships have gone through a lot of restructuring in the past, but I know in the past that the Invitationals had almost as high as EV as the actual old Pro Tours, so there's a lot of people that were putting a lot of effort into these events, and so you can really get some nice data points for these and really get a good point of the format from what comes up from these invitationals. So I'm pretty excited for this weekend. I think it's going to be really great. I know both you and I have a few horses in this race coming this weekend, so it'll get to see our friends down there battling.
Oh, definitely. Who are your horses that you know maybe locally?
So local Mainer, Casey Lancaster, who I follow on Twitter.
Legacy All-Star. I mean, the Invitational is not Legacy, but I know that he's testing with Lotus Box, so I definitely expect him to have a solid Pioneer deck. And, so I'm definitely looking for Casey to do well with his teammates.
Yeah, and I should double-check this person. I think you know... Caleb McVeigh also, right?
Yeah, Caleb McVeigh. I know he's definitely qualified. I'm not sure. I also know he's been playing a lot of Pioneer. I know he's been playing a lot of Blue-Green Nexus.
Yeah. He's a good bud of mine from New Hampshire. And I'll be interested to see if he plays in this event and how well he does.
Yeah, as far as big horses that I think are going to do well on the tour, I really am rooting for Johnny Hobbs. He's a very good modern.
Very good.
Yep. And I would like to see if how good Abe Corgan can come off his big GP win from last weekend and go right into the Invitational and see if he can chain them together.
Now, I'm not trying to diminish anything that Abe did, but I heard that was like the smallest GP ever, or one of the smallest GPs ever. Do you know the size on that?
Yeah, it was 550 players. Like, the only reason why I played the main event was because I heard it was going to be so small. I would have just been happy playing Mystery Boost all weekend and skipping the main event. But, like, it seemed like a good EV to just join the GP at 550 players. And, yeah, Abe played against Reed Duke in the finals and took home the trophy.
Yeah, I saw the top eight of that, and it just looked completely stacked. So,
yeah, I mean, so even for a small field, like, the top eight, I mean, the cream rises to the top, as they say.
Yeah.
So moving on to other news this week in Pioneer. Magic Online. Okay, moving on to other news in Pioneer this week. Arena came out with their monthly update, and they told us to be on the lookout for Pioneer in the future. And they're going to talk about doing this as they implement remastered old standard sets from the Pioneer time period. And it's going to be really far down the road at this point, probably at least, I'm thinking no earlier than quarter three next year. So not until at least summertime next year. I would be very surprised and happily surprised if they get it any time earlier than quarter three.
Yeah, I mean, this is the type of thing that I have really no expectations of right now, but it's really something to look forward to in the future because, you know, I love playing Pioneer, and I actually do like playing Pioneer on Magic Online, but I would really like to play Pioneer on MTG Arena. That just sounds like the best experience ever because then I'll be able to play a format that I like on the client I like.
Oh, definitely. Like if I could just play all Magic on Arena, it would give me a lot more. Like if I could play all formats on Arena, it would give me a lot more incentive to move over. But for the time period, I'm going to still stick to my guns and say Magic Online is the more superior client. It's just a lot more familiar. I know that plays a big role and being able to like shortcut things. And I know people think it's like clunky, but I like the clunky feel to it. I'm looking forward to when and where they're going to implement Arena Pioneer in the future.
I noticed that with when I play Magic Online, I misclick or like I when I play Arena, I make more mistakes because I'm playing online than when I play Magic Online. If you get what I'm saying,
Magic Online definitely emulates paper Magic a lot more, I think, than Arena does.
Yeah, that was something for a while that was like kind of tripping me up on Arena. And also, I will say one of the things with Magic Online is I actually think it's way more expensive than I think MTG Arena is more expensive than Magic Online because Magic Online, if you want to play all of these, you know, older formats, you can just get a, you know, Mana Traders, hashtag non-sponsored, but you can't sponsor as Mana Traders. Mm-hmm. You can get a Mana Trader, you can get a Card Hoarder, you can, you know, do whatever, and you can just have all those decks, whereas with MTG Arena, you have to get all of the gems and then craft the cards, and you can't really trade or dust them, so it's kind of weird.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there are those people that, I think the biggest thing is Arena feels a lot more time investment needed. Like, I know that there's a lot of there's people out there that are like, yeah, I always spent $5 on Arena ever, and I've just, like, been infinite ever since. And, like, I'm not one of those people that has 80 hours, like, that I'm devoting to Arena a month to grind all this, each standard set, to have one of each, to have a play set of each card, and to have infinite gems to do whatever I want on the client. So, like, I like to just pay for the drafts I want to play, or like get packs and whatever to go draft again if I win.
Yeah.
So I like the modular sense of Magic Online. And also, there's also the option that you can like sell your packs for actual cash and things like that. So like, I don't think we're ever going to see a huge like change in the economy of Arena, but I think people don't understand that it's a huge time investment that you need to make the economy work for the best.
Right.
So the fourth news and the last news for this podcast is this week's ban announcement. And
yay!
Who saw this one coming?
You know, I think everyone... So, the general consensus when this came out, so Vayla Summer getting the axe, and a lot of people, when I saw this, were just like, you know, I didn't expect this, but I'm happy with it. I think that was a lot of the general consensus.
Yeah, I definitely didn't expect it. I felt it was going to be one of those weeks that nothing got banned.
Same. Honestly, yeah.
I think just the feel that, yes, there's a big invitation this weekend. So I'm glad that... I'm personally happy that Vayla Summer got banned. I think I talked about a little bit in a previous episode where if we just had a little more interaction, like when they banned Kat, if we just had Teferi to get banned or Vayla Summer at the time to get banned, like we'd be able to interact with the Kat combo. And I don't think Kat needed to leave the format. And I think Kat can... If they ban Teferi, maybe we can see Kat come back for a week. and let us try to interact with the Kat. But I think I wasn't expecting a big ban with a big showcase tournament. Even though Magic had told players that this was going to be a trial period that's only going to really be online. But Star City went ahead and changed the format of their premier tournament 2 weeks prior to the tournament. So yeah, not being a huge staple of a deck definitely helps players that were preparing for the tournament not have to change like their entire archetype.
Because I mean, like, Vayla Summer being banned, this isn't like Felidar Guardian being banned or anything like that. Like, this isn't going to drastically change the format. This doesn't change the decks in the format. This just kind of, in my mind, this just changes the percentages, and it changes how good some of the matchups are, especially post-board, because this was just, I mean, kind of ridiculous sideboard card. The fact that this card ever was printed, like, people on Twitter were arguing if Vayla Summer was a Dispel that drew a card or a Cryptic Command that drew a card. It's like, all right, like, if you're making that argument, it doesn't even matter. It needs to go.
Yeah, I think... I saw people, like, after Vayla Summer got banned, they talked about Autumn's Veil, and they're like, yeah, this card is the same card, but it's missing draw a card. The three most powerful words in Magic, right?
Yeah.
It's just crazy, like, what Magic or R&D was thinking when they printed that card. Like, I don't know. The card's just like the most insane, I guess, pyroblast for green. Like, I got green pyroblast, but better.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I don't know, because I saw someone on Twitter and they were just saying, like, I can understand how a card like this went by without a lot of testing, because a lot of times, the cards like Vayla Summer that have existed in the past, like the card you just mentioned, they were not really that good. They were fine. And I will just say that I know in people I've tested with over the course of Magic, a lot of people, when they're testing cards and matchups, they focus more on main board than they do on sideboard, even though you really should focus, in my mind, as much or maybe even more on the sideboard and matchups. So I can understand how people in R&D may have looking at Vayla Summer and say, okay, well, this kind of cyber card in the past, has never really been good, so we're just going to try to push it a little bit more, and we'll see where it goes. And I could definitely see them just not testing it a ton, just because, you know, if they follow the same kind of concept that a lot of other people do, where they just don't test the Cyborg matchups as much, it could just slip through the cracks. Now, given how Veil of Summer is, like, it's just pushed even past its cycle. Like, every other card in that cycle is 2 mana, and Veil of Summer is 1 mana. I don't really get that. I actually think Veil of Summer would have been a fine card at 2 mana, like colorless and a green. So that part I really don't understand, but I can kind of get at where some people are saying it's like, oh, I can see how this would have slipped through the cracks.
I definitely agree. I think they also, if they had made Veil of Summer only be able to be cast if your opponent had cast a blue or black spell, which, by the way, for about a month or two, I think right into the first standard open of that and Worcester, I was playing that way, thinking that, oh, I can't cast this card unless they've already cast a blue or black spell this turn. Yeah, that's not exactly how it works.
Yeah.
it only gives you protection from blue or black, but yeah. But anyway, so I really think you're definitely dead on with the card was being looked at as a sideboard card, and they didn't expect people to be playing 2-3 of them in their main decks. I think right. They really could have really benefited from like someone like from the Czech house on their team, like Stanislav Sivka or Andrei Strasky, who like literally build their 75s as a 75. Like, if you looked at their Mythic Championship 5 deck list, I think their Bant, I think it was their Bant deck list, that like they literally build their deck as a 75, not a 60 and a 15. They have like 75 cards that, like, depend on situational matchups and whatnot, they can go into Quest and Beast or Lovestruck Beast, and like they gotta have a more mix and play of with their sideboard and their main deck.
Yeah, and I mean, just as a quick shout out, I mean, Andrei Strasky winning Mythic Championship 6. I mean, I don't know how much of that event you watched, but
I was there.
Were there. Yeah, yeah, you were there. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen, like, I guess I shouldn't say that, but
I know it's hard to say, like, that finals being the most deserving two people in the world. Like, there's a lot of deserving people in Magic, but, like, it's such a good feel to see two friends like that up there on the biggest stage in the finals. I think everyone can really agree with that. Like, to see them up there after, like, and to see, like, Andre win. First off, like, Andre wasn't put into the MPL earlier in the year when he was doing very well, and there were some spots that opened up, and he continued to do very well, and he literally forced himself into the position that he is now in to potentially make the MPL for 2020.
Is he not locked?
I am fairly sure that with the win, he is locked. I really don't know.
I'd be very shocked if he wasn't.
I think it's like two people like within striking distance have to meet in the finals of like the Arena Mythic Championship or something like that to like. But I'm pretty sure he's locked because like with the win. If he was in second, I think if he had lost the PV, I think he would have been in danger or like very close. But I think the win did lock him, if I recall.
Yeah.
So like, congrats, like just having a great year to Andre, and like he's one of the best streamers out there. I love his streams. I don't know about you, but it's great.
Definitely. So kind of going back into Pioneer, we are going to talk about some of the decks that's impressed us from decks that we've played this week, decks that we saw from the PTQ that happened, decks from the 5-0 dumps. I know there were two different deck dumps between now and last episode that we're going to take a look at. And Slater, do you kind of want to start us off with the first deck that has impressed you?
Yeah. I'm talking about the first deck that I saw this week after getting back from Richmond, and that was the PTQ win deck list. The PTQ win deck list was Mono Black Aggro. And I talked last week on the podcast, the deck to beat this week was going to be Mono Black, but I did not expect it to go this low. So this Mono Black Aggro deck, played by Blastoids, I think he might have broke it. Like, I've been testing this deck. My friend Rob has been testing this deck. I have a couple friends that are playing in the Invitational, and it's just been doing what we want. So what the main deck has to offer is it has 13 one-drop creatures. These feature Knight of the Ebon Legion, which is a good thing to pump your mana into later in the game. And it also is just a very aggressive creature from recent standard. And then it has Night Market Lookout. This is a creature that when it gets tapped, it drains life. One copy of Gutter Bones, which... because we don't have Grave Crawler in the format, this is just a one of that, like, it works very well with the four copies of Smuggler's Copy in this deck. And four copies of Bloodstoke Champion, which also works very well with just the aggressive deck in general and Smuggler's Copter as well. Going up the curve, you got four Scrap Heap Scrounger, which is a versatile creature that can come back from board clears. You exile a creature from your graveyard to bring it back to the battlefield tapped. Or actually, it doesn't matter. It's not tapped, I don't think. But it just can't block.
Yep.
And then four Murderous Rider. And this is a big thing. Murderous Rider won the PTQ. And won the PTQ when Summer Veil was still a card. And now that Veil of Summer is not a card anymore, I think Murderous Rider is in even better spot than it was this past weekend when this PTQ happened. And then topping the curve for creatures is Rankle. And there's three copies of Rankle. And this card, let me tell you, this card has been impressing me very, very much. Like, it just takes the door, it slams it shut. Like, it does everything I want for a curve topper in this type of deck. Like, discarding, like, cards that they have left in hand. Or, like, taking out, like, if you're playing against, like, a bigger creature deck, you can take out, like, a ground blocker, and then it can also draw you cards and like drain the last points of life off your opponent's life total. And then, as we talked about earlier in the podcast episodes, it has the eight black interaction spells that are huge for this color in this format. Four Fatal Push, four Thoughtseize.
Yep.
And what do you think about that land base? You got a card that has been underrepresentative for this entire format up to this point, I think. Four Mutable.
Yeah, I don't understand why more decks aren't playing Mutable. I do like the mana base just because, I mean, it's like, it almost seems free because, I mean, you're mono black, so, I mean, you just get access to such a clean mana base, just being able to curve out. Having Mutable is kind of just like, it's so free. So, and, I mean, in addition to the Mutavault, having Castle Locktwain as just a way to kind of get that card advantage, I think it's just really nice for the deck. You have the Urborg, that way, in case you have some draws where maybe you draw one too many Mutavaults, that kind of help. So, I really like this deck. I I've already said, I love the mana base. I love the fact that it's aggressive. I really think being aggressive is kind of where you want to be in this format, with a few exceptions. But, yeah, I like a lot of what this black deck is doing, and I'm not surprised that it won the PTQ.
Yeah, I'm not either. Like, I think it goes under the green deck. And it also has, like, pretty much a bye against blue-white. And the reason why it has a bye against blue-white is because of the sideboard that it was playing. Four Duress could go along with the four Thoughtseize that are in the main, along with three Kitesail Freebooters and a copy of Rune Raider, which Rune Raider, it has raid, and when you attack, you draw a card and lose life equal to that creature, that card's converted mana cost. So,
yeah,
I think the thing is about, like, what I've been testing along with my friend Kellen Pastor, who is qualified for this Invitational and is gonna crush it. Good luck, Kellen. I think there's a little bit too much discard effects in this 75. I think the format is a little bit too creature heavy to have this much discard, especially you have seven copies of like duress effects in your sideboard with Freebooter and Duress.
Yeah.
So I think I've been testing without the Freebooters, and I mentioned with you earlier off the show that Blight Beetle is very good in this format, and I think Blight Beetle is a perfect card for the sideboard. I know one card that we'll talk about in a minute. Vivian Arcbow Ranger is on everyone's wish list right now. And Blight Beetle does everything you want against Vivian and Nissa and Hydras and Walking Ballistas, Snakes, Hangar Back Walkers. It does the works. It's pro green. They have very low removal that can actually get off the battlefield as well. Yeah. So look for Blight Beetle to be a big impact player this weekend. And look for Mono Black Aggro to make it into the Invitational Top 8 as well.
All right. Cold shot. I like it. You know, one of the things that I thought was super funny about when Veil of Summer was in the format is you had decks like these that I saw some people legit put Transgress the Mind in their sideboard because they didn't want to get hit by Veil of Summer.
Hey, and that card is the Void, right? I mean, that card is not a black card.
Exactly, yeah. So it's like people were going that far just to not get hit by Veil of Summer. And now you can just play however many and whatever kind of discard effects you want, even if you're playing too many of them, which, I mean, I would agree with you. I think 4 Duress, in addition to the 4 Thoughtseize and 3 Kitesail Freebooter, is kind of excessive. But I really do like the look of this list regardless. One of the decks that I've been enjoying a lot this week that I've had some success with is Blue-White Control. And kind of the reason why I decided to start with this deck is because I was really interested in casting Wrath effects, specifically because when looking at the first place deck, the Mono Black deck, in addition to the second and third place deck, which were the kind of blue-green stompy decks, I was really interested in casting Supreme Verdict just because it does get hit by Stubborn Denial. And so the Stubborn Denial, backed by Narset and these awesome Planeswalkers, whether that's, you know, both the Teferis, Elspeth, which I think is just so insane in these type of matchups, in these creature matchups, that I've been really happy with Blue-White Control. And I also have been really happy playing the card Field of Ruin, because I think Field of Ruin is just incredible in this format, because you can kind of pick off so many things, whether that's, you know, the Search for Iskanta, whether that's the any of the castles or the Mutavault. Like, there's just so many targets for it that I've been kind of going up in my numbers. I've seen a lot of different lists only play one Field of Ruin, but honestly, I've been as high as 3 at certain points just because the mana is so good that I feel comfortable having 3 Field of Ruin in my deck.
Yeah, I think Field of Ruin is an interesting call. Especially with so many mono-colored decks. Even though the mono-colored decks, like, obviously mono-green has Nykthos, mono-black, as we mentioned, has Mutavaults and the Castle. Is it good enough to play against just Nykthos, though?
So the thing about Nykthos is it's fine against Nykthos. It's not great because Nykthos plays a lot of times like a ritual spell. Like it's not really a land that generates a ton of value as the longer the game goes. Because smart Nykthos players most of the time a Nykthos will come down and immediately generate a bunch of mana. So it's not like you'll get a ton of value out of that, but even the monocolor decks, like we've seen in, you know, almost all these deck lists, they're still playing, you know, any of the castles or any other variation of lands. There's other decks that I'm going to talk about in a little bit, like the Golos decks, where Field of Ruin is just insane against.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I've definitely seen a lot of Field of the Dead, different type of ramp decks.
Yeah, that was definitely one of my inspirations to do that, to play more Field of Ruin, just because, you know, that was one of the big things was when Field of Ruin or not Field of Ruin, when Field of the Dead was in Standard, everyone just wanted Field of Ruin so badly because everyone was saying, oh, this would be the perfect answer. It's the thing that we needed to kind of, you know, make this format bearable, and, you know, we didn't have it. But now that we do, I think Blue-White Control, especially with the ban of Veil of Summer, is in a good spot right now.
Yeah, I definitely think the control decks got better with the Veil of Summer leaving. But I wonder if, like, the blue-white control decks, like, when Veil of Summer was around, like, you mentioned Transgressive Mind, if they should have just been playing Void Shatters.
Void Shatter is the Devoid Cancel?
Yeah.
Probably not. That's probably not good enough because, I mean, those decks aren't really interested in cancel. Really, they're interested in, like, syncopate-type effects. So,
I mean, I think a lot of them are playing the Senator of Sabotage, right?
Some of them are. I mean, I guess I shouldn't I shouldn't say that they're not interested. They're not interested in the cancel. They are interested in the cancel, but they're interested in canceled upsides, like Sinister Sabotage or Absorb. Absorb actually has been the one I've been playing more, just because I think the format's being... the format's a little bit aggressive right now, so I really have liked the life gain. But I think straight cancel is not something I would be interested in.
I saw someone mention that to play in that over Sinister Sabotage because it doesn't get hit by Mystical Dispute.
That is an interesting... See, okay, but here's the thing, though. So, like, yes, that's interesting, but in your sideboard, you also play Mystical Dispute, so it's not even, like... It's not even, like, you're really giving up much in, like, the counter war, because you can just have your own Mystical Dispute. But I don't know. Maybe... If the format becomes really, like, into the blue-white decks, I could see that, you know, being more reasonable. I think as it stands right now, you're kind of giving up a little bit too much, but... I could see a future where kind of the Void Shatter would be good.
Yeah, I haven't played enough of Blue White Control to know exactly what's right and what's wrong at this point, but I definitely think Blue White Control and Control in general has definitely increased its chances of livelihood with the Veil of Summer ban. So I'm going to be interested to see if those Control players like Shaheen Serrani or Zach Allen get trapped into playing it this weekend at the Invitational.
Yeah. All right, so what's the next deck you got up?
So the next deck that I have that I've been very impressed with is Hardened Scales. So we mentioned Blight Beetle is the bane of this deck, but I think Hardened Scales just does things so much power, like so many powerful things in the early game. With I've seen either they're playing like Experiment 1 and... Experiment 1,
Pelt Collector,
Snake, Hardened Scales, to put lots of counters on very aggressive starts with, like, the Serpent from Eldraine, and yep. Walking Ballista, and Hangerback Walker. So, like, you can put, like, infinite counters on things very fast, and there's just, it goes bigger than the other decks in the format, and, like, if you can put, like, two counter, you can, like, 2-for-1, like, take out a couple, like, elves in these decks that are playing, like, 8 elves with Walking Ballista, then you can definitely win that matchup very easily.
Yeah, I this has been the deck over the past week that I've been playing the most. I've run through a few leagues with it, and I've just been kind of crushing it, just because, like you said, it's so aggressive. Like, the starts where you go Pelt Collector turn 1, turn 2 Snake, suddenly your Pelt Collector is a 3-3, and you're attacking for 3 on turn 2. Like, that's just so good. And I, like, a lot of the ways that I've won games is I just go, like, 1-drop, Snake, like, 1-drop, 1-drop, or even just, like, you know, a Walking Ballista of some sort, and then cast a Nissa, and then minus 2, put, you know, 2 to 3 counters on all my creatures, and then just attack. Not a lot of decks are ready to kind of deal with that. And so I've been really impressed with this deck. I originally got my list from one of the people I talked about earlier, Casey Lancaster, on Twitter. And his list was retweeted by the Pioneer Decklist account, Pioneer DLS, which is done by the Arena Deckless guys. And so that's kind of where I got my inspiration from. I kind of tweaked the sideboard a little bit post-ban. I put, because there's less Veil of Summer, I actually added another Assassin's Trophy in the sideboard. And one of the aspects of this deck I thought was really, really kind of ingenious was the sideboard.
Questing Beast.
Yeah. So yeah, one of the sideboard plans that I thought was kind of ingenious was the Questing Beast sideboard plan, which I noticed that, you know, in a lot of these small creature matchups, I just bring in and they just don't have any answer to.
Yeah, Questing Beast is insane. Like especially if people aren't expecting it, and like it just does things on an axis that the rest of the deck wasn't already doing. Like it just pressures things, doesn't like need to rely on counters. So, and it can trample through a protected from green creature like Blight Beetle.
Yep.
So yeah, is that? What's your next list deck on the list for this weekend, or in general?
So another deck that I haven't gotten to play with much, but I've played against a lot, is the Golos decks, and the decks that are playing like Field of the Dead, Hour of Promise, with the red green card from Eldraine that I'm blanking the name of right now, Call to the Wilds, I think, maybe. I don't know. It's the 5-mana card that you, like, exile the top 5, you can play an additional land, and you can cast those cards until your next turn.
The green-red deck's playing that? Or the Golos deck. Yeah, the Golos deck.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, I played against it a bunch this week, and I just noticed it's just been really good. The only times when they really lose from that spot is when they're really far ahead on board. And I mean, I've been playing a lot of the snake deck, so obviously when they cast it, they are really behind on board, so it's kind of hard for them. And when they make a lot of tokens, it is hard for a lot of the decks for a lot of these ground creature decks to get past them. But when you're playing, you know, Walking Ballista and a million ways to put counters on Walking Ballista, that's not hard to get through. But I really am a fan of these kind of different Field of the Dead decks with Hour of Promise, Golos, all these different. And, you know, you're still playing cards like Growth Spiral. So I'm a big fan. I think that whether this deck ends up being good, it kind of depends on where the format goes with the bans. If the format goes in a kind of more aggressive standpoint, I'm not sure. These decks could still be good. In fact, I could easily see this deck be good, because then you can play things such as Sweltering Suns, but it may not, you know, be as good if it's a little bit more, I don't know, if it's just too aggressive and too linear. Then I could see this deck not being as good. But I think this deck actually matches up very well against the combo decks. So I'd be interested to see in this deck, depending on where the format goes.
I actually think the Golos deck is very good against aggro decks. I mean, we saw it in Standard, and like the aggro deck was a joke. Like, all you had to do, and especially I think the Bant version of this Golos deck, the one that Batuna, Trophy Leader, has been playing, like, it has, like, infinite, like, I don't know, life gain, early game, like, Abrolled Grazer, MVP of, like, multiple formats.
I guess you're right.
We could see Abrolled Grazer, like, being in the winning list of both Modern and Pioneer this weekend for the Invitational, just saying. Hashtag Amulet Titan. So, yeah, I think the Bant version, like, I'm looking at it with, like, Grazers, Rejuvenators. Like, those are, like, great creatures to ramp out into, like, huge Hour of Promise into, like, Sphinx of Revelation. I don't know. Sphinx of Revelation is a card that we finally are seeing play. Mm-hmm. It only took about a month of the format in order to get it.
We got a baby. Yeah, maybe I'm thinking about it in the wrong perspective, because I've only played it against specifically an aggro deck that has access to Questing Beast and Walking Ballista, so maybe I'm really not taking in consideration all the other different aggro decks, because I can see if you are playing a deck like Mono Red, how kind of, I don't know, if you live to basically turn 5, turn 6 with your Golos deck, it doesn't seem like you're losing the game.
Yeah, I mean, that's Golos is the best late game deck in Standard, when it was in Standard, so... I mean, Golos is still in Standard. We can still play Golos.
Yeah, Golos is still there, baby.
Just have Feel of the Dead.
Alright, so kind of moving on from that, what was the next deck that you had for your decks that have been impressing?
So, my next deck, I call a Pinata, because it's been taken, a few whacks already from the ban list. Mono Green Ramp is still going very strong. It dominated the challenge. Dominate might be an underestimate on how well it did in the challenge.
It was kind of ridiculous.
Like, choose who you want. You can pick Brad Nelson, you can pick Todd Anderson's list. They're both like, I mean, we're still early in the format, so like the tune in process is still going on, but like Mono Green's ramp is dangerous. It has 8 elves, it has Nykthos, and it has a card that should be in the format, Once Upon a Time.
Yeah.
Now the question is, can you ban one of the elves and just have it like pretty much be a restricted card and only having 4 copies in your deck instead of 8 copies? Or is that just like pointless having a functional reprint ban, but not like having one ban, not the other?
Yeah, that really doesn't make any sense. I mean, like, to me, it really doesn't make any sense to have, like, Lawn of War Elves banned and have Elvish Mystic be legal in the format. I agree with you. I think Once Upon a Time kind of... It doesn't make sense to me how you can ban a card like the Green Ponder, whatever it was called, Nissa something... and have Once Upon a Time be legal. They just kind of do things that I don't think green should be able to do. Green having just such good card selection, especially with like creatures and lands, like that's really the only thing these decks care about. So it's like it's like if you gave blue access to just care about lands and instants and sorceries, it's like, well, that's really all they care about. So it's like kind of defeats the purpose of, you know, within the color pie. So I agree. I don't think Once Upon a Time is going to be legal for much longer. I hope they get around to banning it. But
third whack and the pinata will fall, right?
Yeah, hopefully.
I mean, I'm pretty sure the deck can still exist even without the 3 cards already banned. Maybe Nykthos can go as well.
Oh boy, do I have some opinions on that one.
I can't wait to hear them.
Yeah, so kind of the next deck that I was a fan of this week was the red-green Embercleave deck that top-8ed the... Actually, did it top-8? I thought it did. Let me just double-check before I go too deep into this. Yes, it did. Okay. So one of the other decks that I was really interested in that top-8ed the PTQ this week was the 4th place deck, which was the red-green Embercleave deck. Now, I will say So, while I was talking about earlier of how I was a big fan casting the card Supreme Verdict, I actually do think this red-green Embercleave deck does a decent job of getting around it, just because you have access to cards like Hazoret the Fervent and Smuggler's Copter. So, I am a big fan of this deck, and the reason why is I like the aggression it puts on. I like the fact that you have the, like we just said, 8 elves in addition to the 4 Once Upon a Time. Or actually, in this list, it's just 2, which I'm not a huge fan of. I'd rather go up to 4 in this deck. But, you know, I think having 8 elves for Once Upon a Time is a great way to just make sure you're consistently powering out those insanely powerful 3 drops, whether that's Lovestruck Beast, Legion War Boss, an early Embercleave or Questing Beast. So this is a big deck. This is a deck that I've been a fan of, and I know one of our mutual friends, Adam Wallace, A-Bomb Diggity on Magic Online, has been playing this, and he agrees with me. He's up to a 4 Once Upon a Time, and you know his list is kind of riffing off of the PTQ top 8 deck list.
So you know why this deck's really great against Wrath effects? Is because all of its creatures are such high impact creatures that need to be answered. You look at Golem Rabble, you have to like answer eventually or else it's gonna kill you. You look at a card like Legion War Boss, it's the same thing as Golem Rabble Master, it's the same point. And right. You look at Lovestruck Beast, it's two creatures and it's a 5/5 that's gonna kill you if you don't answer it. On top of the other cards that you mentioned, Hazoret and Smuggler's Copter just like be there on the field at Survivor Wrath. And then card that's great against control anyway is Questing Beast. So, like, a lot of these creatures either have haste, either ramp out three drops, or just take over the game on their own, and you don't need to play anything else into, or, like, extend your board into a Wrath. So that's why I think this deck is great against the blue-white decks that you mentioned. And I think this deck is also a very big contender for this weekend. I just saw Austin Collins giving a quick shout-out last minute, looking for cards for this deck. And, like, I don't know, Austin Collins has, I think, top 8ed 3 out of the last 4 invitationals, some crazy amount. So look for him to do well this weekend. And I think he's already definitely locked for the Players Championship. That's another thing that's on the line this weekend. So it's going to be interesting to see how that goes and see what people bring to the table. So the next deck, if you're done talking about this one, you have something else?
I want to say one last thing about this deck.
Sure.
Another thing that I like about this deck is I think the mana is really great. If you kind of just look at, you know, what the mana base is doing, what the cards are doing, you'll notice that up until you get to the 4 drops and above, there's no cards with 2 or more mana symbols in the casting costs. And with access to 8 duels, 4 Once Upon a Time, it's so incredibly hard to get mana, to get color screwed in this deck, that I think you'll just almost always be able to cast your cards, almost always be able to hit your land drops, and almost always be able to curve out in this deck. I mean, this deck seems to be made just to have one goal in mind, and that's curving out, and it seems like it does the job incredibly well.
I mean, it has Elf into a 3-drop that wins the game, so I agree with the curve out, and Embercleave looks fantastic with the War Boss and Goblin. It just seems insane. You can put that card into play on turn 4 easily.
Turn 3.
You can put it into play turn 3?
Yeah. Turn 1 Elf. Turn 2
Problem. Oh yeah. Turn 2. Yeah. Turn 3 easily. Yeah. Definitely. So that's gross. My fourth and final deck that I haven't played myself yet, but I saw come out of the 5-0 dump. And I thought this was super spicy. And it is Imminent Doom.
Oh, boy. I'm going to have to do some control effing right here.
Imminent Doom is a deck list by Jetpack Batman. And we shared it on our Twitter already earlier in the day. And it was also shared over on Arena Deck Pioneer deck list. This deck has the 3-drop enchantment Imminent Doom that whenever you cast a spell... Okay, first off, it enters the battlefield with 1 counter on it, a Doom counter. And whenever you cast a spell with converted mana cost equal to the number of Doom counters on Imminent Doom, you deal that much damage to any target, or actually it's just target creature or player, and then you put that many Doom counters, and you put down 1 more counter on Imminent Doom.
I remember this card.
Yeah, and so the thing about this deck is it plays cards like Banefire, which is like a modular. You can make it anywhere up the to like trigger the Imminent Doom, or just dumb them for lethal. It plays Cut to Ribbons, which can either be a 2, a 6, or an 8, I think. It plays 4 Thoughtseize. It plays 4 Bowmat Courier, 4 Bone Crusher Giant, Bone Crusher Adventure card. It can be a 2 or a 3, which is nice. Eternal Scourge is a 2-drop haste creature when it comes back. It makes something not be able to block equal to when it enters battlefield, equal to its power or less. And then when it comes back, you can internalize it as a 4/4 later in the game. Glorybringer, you can exert it, deal 4 damage to a creature. It has two Hazorites, Walking Ballista, another modular card that you can do up the chain. Lilian, the Last Hope to get back creatures and good against control decks. Three Chandra, Torch of Defiance, also good against control decks and can deal four damage to big creatures. And then four Lightning Strike, four Wild Slash. And this deck is wild.
Yeah, I mean, removal dot deck. And the thing is like, your removal just kind of kills them after a while. So, I mean, I really like the look of that deck, and I think it's super sweet. I mean, it's kind of, you know, whether this type of deck, I don't know. That's the weird thing. So, Imminent Doom's an enchantment, right? It's not an artifact?
Yeah, it's a 3-drop enchantment.
Okay. All right. That's a point in its favor.
Yeah, because I think there's a lot less enchantment rule than artifact rule right now, right?
Well, yeah, especially with, like, Oko in the format, because Oko can't hit enchantments.
Oh, that is true. Yeah, it can make it into an elk.
Yeah, so I actually think that's pretty decent. I'm pretty interested in that deck to see if it can continue having some success. Kind of for me, my last deck that I have that I saw that kind of caught my attention was Caleb Durward, who is a, you know, if you don't know Caleb Durward, you've kind of been living under a rock. He's one of Magic's most popular and successful streamers. And he had a 5-0 deck list with Goblins, which I thought was super sweet. Goblins was a deck that on our first show, when we were talking about Powers and Pillars, this was one of the kind of archetypes or tribal archetypes that I thought had a chance to do something, just because you have access to a lot of different goblins. I mean, some of the payoffs include Goblin Rabble Master, Goblin Pile Driver, Goblin War Chief, Reckless Bushwhacker, and Legion Loyalist in this deck. But a few different payoffs that Caleb had was 3 Embercleave, which is a card that I've grown to just absolutely love. 3 Castle Embreath, obviously, if you're playing Mono Red, you should just be playing that card. And 3 Torbrand. So this kind of reminds me a lot of the Mono Red Cavalcade deck in Standard, where you're just kind of making a bunch of 1/1s and small creatures, and then killing them with Embercleave, Torbrand. However, you're kind of doing it at a better rate, just because you have your cards like Warchief, like Goblin Wrestle Master, and Goblin Pile Driver to kind of give you additional payoffs, as well as Foundry Street Denizen. So I think this deck looks sweet. This is definitely a deck I want to try. I'm not 100% sure if it's kind of here to stay, just because I worry about, you know, the Wrath decks, and, you know, any deck with black, it can play the new card from Eldraine that gives neg 3/3 to, you know, a creature type that you choose. So, you know, whatever happens to this deck, who knows? But I think it was certainly sweet.
Yeah, they just need to put Aether Vial in the format.
Hey, let's not do that.
Hey, it comes with an automatic ban. was Caleb playing Smuggler's Copter?
No. And I'm not really sure about that, because Smuggler's Copter's really good. Like, really, really good. So maybe it doesn't really fit the deck list, just because he is also playing Reckless Bushwhacker. So maybe, as weird as it sounds, maybe the deck is a little bit too fast for Copter. But, you know, I could see Copter being put in there.
Was he playing 4 Mutable?
No. And I don't think in this deck I would play 4 Mutable, but I would play some number.
Okay.
I really think, I mean, let's be real. This deck is what looks to be almost entirely 1-drops. A few 4, like 3 4-drops, Embercleave. So all your 3s, you have basically a ton of 1-drops, a few 2-drops, a few 3-drops, and then like 1 4-drop. And then he's playing 23 lands. I think you can definitely, you know, you can either go down on lands, or you can just add like 2 mana vaults in there. And I don't think your mana base would be severely impacted.
I could see it. That's an interesting deck. I think tribal decks, we talked about this in the very first podcast, and I'm very glad to see that Caleb is playing some good old-fashioned... Oh, wait, is he playing... you say he's playing Bushwhacker?
Yep.
With Burning Tree, right?
Nope.
No Burning Tree. Wow.
No Burning Tree. So that's a turn three Bushwhacker that's going to be coming out most of the time.
Okay.
Probably turn four, more likely.
Interesting.
So kind of the last segment that we have, as we've kind of done last week, and I think we're going to do in the, as we go forward, is going to be our hot take segment. So this is kind of when we pretend like we're on ESPN and, the sports shows, and we're going to, try to stir up some drama and, give our hot takes to each other that we honestly believe. So I guess, Slater, why don't you go first? What's your hot takes for both the Invitational this weekend and just in general?
Okay, my hot take for this weekend is Mono Blue Devotion will top eight this Invitational. I thought about this long and hard, and when I
You're just
saw
trying to
Mon
tell me.
and when I saw Mono Black aggro do so well with Mutavault, I just thought what the best deck in the format was, and Theros with Mutavault, and that was Mono Blue Devotion.
All right.
And you know what? It has Tidebinder Mage.
Dude, I hate this deck. This deck sucks. Like,
You have some experience with this deck lately?
I was gonna. Okay, so my personal philosophy is the difference between 3-2 and 4-1 a league is not that much. I really care about more how a deck feels. However, I will say there is a big difference when it comes to pricing on Magic Online, because you get like, I think you get like six chests or something like that if you 4-1, and you only get one if you go 3-2. So I was playing for the 4-1, and I was just absolutely, my hand was busted, and my mono blue opponent just goes Tidebinder Mage. All right, I have the one Fatal Push. Oh, second Tidebinder Mage, third Tidebinder Mage. And it's like, at this point, it's just like, oh my god, are you serious? Like, you're only playing sideboard cards. Like, it's the only way that, like, you can realistically, like, not get killed because of how good my, scales hand was. And then they go, I play Nissa, neg two on my team. And in response, of course, he goes Merfolk Trickster on my snake. And then I get them. I get them to like two or three, and then they go sleep and then kill me. And I'm just, I was so absolutely tilted. Like I don't really get tilted in paper, but online, I will say I can sometimes get pretty tilted, and I was livid.
Sleep. Like the 4 mana creatures tap and then
Yep.
untap.
Yep.
Where did I just see sleep? I literally just saw sleep. Oh, I was watching Gavin Verney, who did a lot of work for Magic, doing the Mystery Booster. I watched him draft this weekend, and he had a deck. He could have had two sleep in this draft deck. I was watching him draft, and he like second picked sleep, or maybe even first picked sleep. But yeah, aside, and yeah, I think sleep is great against all these creatures deck in this format. I talked about a little bit earlier that Mono Black
Yeah, it's
had
pretty good.
too many discard effects. And because there's too many creature decks in this format right now, and I think Sleep is one of the best. It's a great sideboard card right now.
Oh yeah, I mean it just kind of swings the game. I mean, if my opponent had three Tidebinder Mages and even still didn't have the game locked up. Like, they needed the sleep to lock up the game, and the sleep did more than any of their Tidebinder Mages did. So yeah, it's a great card. And Mono Blue, I mean, I hate that deck. I don't think it's that great, but I could definitely see someone piling it to perfection. It's kind of like it's a high ceiling deck. If you're a very good player and you like to make a lot of decisions, you should definitely play a deck like that.
What's your pick for this weekend?
My pick for this weekend is Mono Green. It's a lot
Mono
of
green.
yep. There's a lot of crickets chirping. So kind of the my philosophy behind it is I still think, even though some Veil Summer's banned, even though the Nissa card is gone and the Leyline is gone, I still think the key card to that deck is obviously Nykthos. And until Nykthos gets banned, I still think green will just be the best deck. I think the fact that it has the fastest mana alongside the eight elves and Once Upon a Time, I just don't see any other deck in the format really competing with it as far as velocity goes. And so that is my take for to win the event this weekend is Mono Green.
I mean, that won't be mono blue, so I don't see how that's going to happen.
All right. Well, maybe we'll, I don't want to say we'll bet on it because that is illegal, but we will, you know, maybe a friendly bet.
I mean, last time we friendly bet, I won a PTQ, so.
Oof. All right.
I have one more deck to talk about, and it's currently the deck that I'm playing in a league that I started earlier tonight. And it is Five Color Super Friends Fires of Invention. This deck 5-0 to league.
Give me that list, baby.
This deck, let's pull this up. This deck 5-0 to league, and the most recent deck dump, it has all the Planeswalkers. And I don't know why I had a 13-card sideboard, but I had to add a couple cards to make it not 13-card sideboard. Because, I mean, maybe there's a strategy behind it. I don't know. But I'm assuming that it just like got recorded into Magic database or whatever. MTG Goldfish wrong.
Yeah.
So this deck, it has Fae of Wishes. It has a Singleton Narset. Pardo Avails in the main deck. It has 3 Oko, everyone's favorite Planeswalker. It has 4 Teferi Time Reveler. 2 Jace, Architect of Thought. Which, my first match in this league, I was playing against Saltai Golos. And I assembled Jace, Architect of Thought, with Teferi, with Oath of Teferi. And I just plus 1 Jace twice, because Oath of Teferi lets you do, and my opponent conceded.
Filthy.
It has 2 Nicol Bolas Dragon God, the one from War of the Spark. So it has all abilities of all the Planeswalkers, and then like its ultimate pretty much says you win the game. It has 1 Teferi Hero of Dominaria, which I think it should have 2 playing. I'm through 3 matches, I think, so far. But I like Teferi quite a bit. I loved it in Standard, and yeah.
It's great. And then it has... Life.
Yeah, it's great. 1 Chandra Awakened Inferno. 1 Elspeth Sun Champion. We talked about that card earlier. I think that card is one of the best 6-mana Planeswalkers in almost all of Magic. Well, maybe all of Magic.
Yeah.
I mean, I really hope we... Yeah, even though it's spoiler ready, but... I think that only... Yeah, there's going to be at least an Elspeth in the next set. And I hope it's just as good as Sun's Champion, which I don't think it can be, but... Anyway, and it has the 7-drop Nicol Bolas, which that card's from Armacat, and that card has 4 abilities that all just wreck opponents' hands, draw cards, deals 7 damage, and like exiles all non-land permanents, something like that. So yeah, this deck has been a lot of fun, especially with Oath of Teferi, with Fires of Invention. Like, you get so much value off your Planeswalkers. It feels a little bit win more, but I'm always up for a win more deck.
I mean, you know me
pretty well, right?
Yeah. I mean, listen, it's not winning unless your opponent for the last 4 minutes of a match knows you're winning, or else, but, yeah, you might as well. I mean, like, sure,
you might as well have lost, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's like you're not trying to win; you're trying to beat your opponent.
Yeah. So the first 3 matches in this league I played against are Saltai Oko, Saltai Field of the Dead, Green White Enchantress, and
at Dex Rancid.
It was doing some things. Some things is exactly what I was doing. And the third deck I played against was Bant Collected Company with Fleece Mane Lion.
Ooh, mama.
Yeah, Fleece Mane Lion and Blue White Spirits, pretty much. Like, it wasn't that great, and Supreme Verdict was very good against them.
Fleece Mane Lion, when you say Fleece Mane Lion to me, that to me is just like a nostalgia trip. Like, because when I first started playing, you know, Tournament Magic was around Theros, and that was the first card that to me was just like kind of, it was just insane to me. It was like 2-mana 3/3 that I can pay 5 mana to give a counter on it and hexproof. It's just like,
I mean, that's a very good Watch Wolf, right?
Yeah, definitely. All right, I think that's going to do us for this week. Thank you all for listening. Just to let everyone know, we are available on a lot of different platforms, such as Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud, and MTGCast, as well as a number of others. So we will be back next week, and if there ends up being a band announcement that comes out from the Invitational, look for a podcast episode from us next Monday night, if there is a band. If there isn't, then we're just going to be back next week, Wednesday, Thursday, around that time, with another regular episode. So, that should do it. Have a great day, everyone.
See you. Bye-bye.